Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy, sports, and politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy, sports, and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on. Peace.
Yes, yes, yes. October 4th, 2012, another day of the FSP crew. It's I am JT, a.k.a. the Master, a host of the FSP crew show. I'm joined by my co-host, one of my co-hosts, Jeff the Joker. And as always, we engage in conversation and give you information about the crazy world, the wacky world, and sometimes the serious world of fantasy, sports, and politics. We got a full slate to cover with you tonight. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. It's 347-637-3220. I'm pretty sure if you listen to the show, you know what the call-in number is, but I still got to give it out because we may have some new listeners. We also have a chat room. The chat room is open. It's always open season. Like I say it all the time, when I'm on the air, whether it's tonight, whether it's tomorrow night, Saturday afternoon when it's the FSP show, or the 10 a.m. on Sunday, which is the master plan that I host by myself. Occasionally people jump in and call in we converse. Always open season in the chat room. So question, comment, statement, whatever you want to bring in there, go right ahead. We'll deal with it, and we'll move forward from there. Like I said, we have a great show in store for you tonight. Let's bring my co-host in here. Talk to me, Jeff.
Happy to be here. Thank everybody for joining us.
All right, people. You know, first off, we're going to cover quite a few things here. All right, quite naturally, the first thing we're going to cover is the football game that's tonight. Arizona Cardinals at the St. Louis Rams. Then we're going to cover something that happened in baseball that hasn't happened in almost 50 years. We're going to cover that. We're also going to cover something that happened in baseball again to a team that this is the first time they won in their new location. When they moved, they went through a lot, and they finally won a championship, not a full championship, but it's a start. We're also going to talk about Teddy Roosevelt. Yes, people, Teddy Roosevelt. What are you going to say? What are you talking about, Teddy Roosevelt? He's dead and gone. Well, we're going to talk about Teddy Roosevelt in a certain way. We're also going to talk about the lowly gangrene from New York. The players are going down like flies. What are they going to be doing? We're also going to talk about deep in the heart of Texas, they got lots of problems with a billion-dollar stadium with a lousy team. We're going to talk about the Dallas Cowboys and what's going on with Romo and company. And then we're also going to talk about somebody that decided to come out the closet. Now, I'm not going to say any more than that, because what we're going to do now is we're going to talk about fantasy football first, and then fantasy football, and then we're going to progress with the other agenda that we have. Anyway, fantasy football is this. We got Arizona, and we got St. Louis. Now, quite naturally, over in Arizona, there's one guy that you're definitely going to start, and that happens to be Larry Fitzgerald. In my opinion, he's probably going to get about maybe six catches, maybe close to 90 yards. And I see strong possibility getting into the end zone. In my opinion, you can also, since this is the first bye week or second bye week, you may be needing a running back. He was hyped pretty much last week, kind of waned because he didn't do too much last week. But I think he has the possibility of being able to make a reprieve for himself this week. I'm talking about Ryan Williams. I think you can play him as an RB2 in this, not an RB1, but an RB2. I think he should be able to fare well against the St. Louis Rams. Kevin Cobb, forget it. I wouldn't start him if somebody paid me. Even though he's been performing well and the team's 4-0, the defense has been doing a lot. Kevin Cobb was doing just enough not to lose. And I wouldn't trust Kevin Cobb in this situation. There's another sleeper in here on the Arizona side is Andre Roberts. He had a monster game last week with 2 touchdowns, over 100 yards, and 6 catches. I don't need to see him doing that again this week. This is a pretty good pass defense in St. Louis. On the other side, Sam Bradford, if you're desperate, if you're really desperate, Sam Bradford is a QB2 in a two-quarterback system or league. That's about the only way I would play Sam Bradford. Steven Jackson is a go, even though he has a bad groin. He hasn't scored a touchdown yet, and there's a strong possibility he may not do it in here. But if you're strapped for running backs, you got to start Steven Jackson. And then my favorite player of all these, besides Larry Fitzgerald, this guy is the poor man's Wes Welker, in my opinion. That's Danny Amendola, Sam Bradford's BFF. He'll catch about 7 or 8 catches. About 80 yards. That's usually what his MO is. Not too much yak or yards after the catch, but he does catch a lot of balls. And there may be a strong possibility he get lucky and get into the end zone. Jeff, I rattled all that off, and I know I've been talking a bit and not letting you get in here, but this is your opportunity. Jump in here and say anything that you want to say on the subject of what we're talking about in this football game.
These Thursday night games, they drive me crazy sometimes because sometimes it forces you to make a decision 3 days
right.
before you want to. Like
right.
Ryan Williams, I'd rather make that decision to start him on Sunday instead of doing it now. But that's, you know, the thing is, it's the same for everybody. It's just if you happen to have guys on the two teams playing, it's a drag, but stuff like that should even out in the long run. But, you know, I mean, an excellent player, you're going to, as long as he's healthy, you're going to start every week no matter what. You know, a lousy player is on your bench in case of emergency, but there's those guys in between, and that's when it gets tricky with the Thursday night games.
Right. And I've named a couple guys that are in between. Andre Roberts, in my opinion, is an in-between guy. You don't know if what he did last week is, even if he... if he's going to do half of that, because he's had 2 good games last week being a monster game, but the first and second week, if I'm not mistaken, or the first week he had a good game, and in the middle 2 weeks he didn't have too much of a game. So you don't know if you're going to get something in his first game or something close to his last game, or you're going to get the second or third game that he's played in. So I think that Kevin Cobb, because John Skelton got hurt early, is trying to still get a rapport with these guys, because he didn't really get that much work with these guys during preseason, because both the quarterbacks were in and out of the lineup a lot because they were trying to assess who was going to be the starting quarterback. So pretty much, Kevin Cobb is going through a preseason, an extended preseason. And I think probably from this game on, it should tell a story of how much of a rapport that he has with his wide receivers and the rest of his offense, or if the Cardinals can't wait for John Skelton to get back soon enough. So we'll see what happens there. Anyway, you got anything you want to add to that before we move on?
You know, the thing is, if they could keep winning despite inconsistent play from Cobb, they might let him keep the job as long as they keep winning. And I guess he's shown a little improvement. And you got to give the team some credit, because I think some teams, you know, the guy with the big money almost always gets the starting job, but it's got to be based on merit, because, you know, who wants to play for a team where the best players don't play? So
right,
right. And Cobb showed a little improvement last week. I'll tell you, if I was a team, I don't know if I'd want to trade with Philly for a quarterback, because Andy Reid knows how to make those guys look good, and then when they leave Philly, they don't look so hot. You know?
That's true. That's true.
It's just a very friendly system, I guess, over there.
Right. All right, let's move on, and let's transition from tonight's game to a couple games in the past that showed two teams, in my opinion, going in the same direction, and that's down. Let's first talk about my ex-team, the team that boasts that that at one point earlier in the season that they were going to the Super Bowl, and that they were even though their record is 2-2, that's still in first place, which I can't believe, but they're still in first place, tied for first place, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, we're talking about the New York Jets. Quite naturally, the week before, not last week, not last Sunday, but the week before, they lost Darrelle Revis to an ACL. Well, they lose Santonio Holmes to a Lisfranc, and he's done for the season. So their two best players on either side of the ball, one on defense, one on offense, are gone. Now, they signed, and I can't believe they did this, but they signed him without even trying to tap somebody that's got more experience and probably better qualified. They tapped Jason Hill, who's, in my opinion, a journeyman wide receiver, to join the New York Jets. So what I'm saying is this. They're going to rely on Jeremy Curley, Stephen Hill whenever he gets back, Dustin Keller, who's still backed up. I think he's dealing with a hamstring or a groin, something like that. And in the backfield, they got Sean Green and Bilal Powell. Neither one are world beaters. Neither one are studs running the ball. One's better than the other, but not by much. I had said on Sunday that I'm looking for a guy that they snatched from the Houston Texans practice squad to get a shot. And if he gets a shot, I think he'll take over the running back duties for the New York Jets. I'm talking about, I don't know if you know this guy, Jonathan Grimes. He got snatched from the practice squad of Houston Texans, and they reluctantly hated to see him go because they really liked him. He's the third man on the totem pole now, because Joe McKnight, they moved over to defense, and he's a team, so I don't think he's going to be running the ball that much. Talk to me, Jeff. What do you think about some of the things that are or those things that have been going on with the Jets and the dilemma and situation the Jets are in now?
Wow, I mean, even before those two injuries, they didn't look that great.
Right.
I'm not a Jet fan, but I'm in the New York area, and most big cities have one sports radio station. New York has two, and you know, the Jet fans are foaming out the mouth, just does not look good. I mean, there's been talk, why aren't they bringing back Plaxico Burress? I mean, he was okay last year. The only reason, or one of the reasons I could see for not bringing him back is whoever they bring in is, you know, going to be a backup, and you want your backup receivers to help out on special teams. You know the Jets miss. I mean, he's been gone a couple of years at this point. They miss Jericho Cotchery. And, you know, he's with Pittsburgh, and, you know, he was a good, solid player, but, you know, he wasn't the Jets kind of ball player, you know. too classy, you know.
Yeah, you're exactly right. He was a definitely classy guy, low-key, humble type of guy, went about as a professional and did his job.
But, you know, they don't like guys like that. I'll tell you, this season can get real ugly real quick for the Jets. And eventually, if they keep losing, it's going to be Tebow time, which will drastically change the offense. But the problem is, they're still going to have lousy blockers, and he won't have good receivers. But eventually, it's going to come down to that if they keep losing, which is most likely. And it doesn't get easier because Monday night they're playing your new team, Houston.
Yeah, and I hope they wear them out, which I think they will. I was thinking about this before, and I was listening to ESPN Radio, and a caller about the same time they were talking about the Jets. I was thinking about the same subject that the caller called in about, and that was about if. For some reason, they get tired of a 49.6 completion percentage, which is what Mark Sanchez is, which is absolutely horrible. And that's put into effect that he had a very good game with Buffalo. So imagine that good game with Buffalo, how bad his percentage would be, his completion percentage would be. And they tire of Mark Sanchez. My question to you is this. They have Tim Tebow, who can't hit the side of a barn if he was standing 10 feet in front of it. What's to stop them, or would it make any sense for them to eventually, because they've lost key players and they're not coming back anytime soon this year, to put in their third-string quarterback, see what he can do, Greg McElroy?
You know, somebody was mentioning him. I mean, he's a guy, he's looked good in – you know, third and fourth quarter of preseason games. He's definitely behind Tebow. But if Tebow doesn't get it done or he gets banged up, they're probably going to give him a shot, because if they bench Sanchez, it probably means the end of the Sanchez era in New York. I mean, they do owe him guaranteed money for next year, but, you know, it's a big deal because, you know, they traded up for the guy. They made him a starter as a rookie. They really gave him every opportunity to be the guy. And in his fourth season, it's time to poop or get off the pot. But unfortunately, he doesn't have the supporting cast now.
Well, and this is I bought into this for a while. But when you stop and think about it and you sit on the outside looking in, now, he's the quarterback of the Jets. Now, if you look at his performance early in his career, first year, second year, he was all right. He was spotty. His lows weren't that low. His highs weren't that high. But now his lows are even lower than his lows were ever been, and his highs aren't even that high anymore. So you're getting mostly low-end performance, hitting guys at the feet, missing guys, overthrowing them by miles, or not being able to hit them where they're at. He's better than Tebow, but because he can pass the ball better than Tebow, but not by much. Let me put it that way. I mean, Tebow is really hindered by passing the ball. Mark Sanchez, I don't know if he's regressed. Everyone thought that because Brian Schottenheimer got fired or let go or he quit or whatever, that Sanchez would flourish or do better under Tony Sperano, but he's as bad or even worse than he was last year or the three previous years. I don't know if
benching him or getting rid of him or whatever is not a bad thing, because it can be quarterback play can be discouraging to the whole team, quite naturally to the offense, very naturally to the defense sitting on the sidelines and watching this debacle in front of them, and then having to go out and make up for his mistakes of interceptions or fumbling the ball, which he's very prone to be doing in the most inopportune times. I don't think Monday night's going to be pretty. I think they'll probably put up a valiant effort early, but get worn down, and I see a couple picks, maybe a fumble from Sanchez. And the just like you said, if he gets benched or Tebow comes in there, then that more likely is the end of Mark Sanchez. So I think they're giving him every opportunity to succeed. Even if he was a good quarterback and he had some receivers that were inexperienced, he should be able to complete some passes when the receivers are open and all he has to do is play pitch and catch with them, which he hasn't been able to do. So Rex Ryan and Tannenbaum are on a slippery slope here trying to hang in there with Tim Tebow, but their jobs, in my opinion, are on the line because they're hanging their hat on this kid, and they also brought in Tim Tebow, which is, I think, the worst move they could possibly make, rather than getting a solid number two quarterback if they don't believe in Greg McElroy. So I don't know if you have any comments on what I just said or what.
To expand on something you said, you know, they have a new offensive coordinator, Tony Sparano, a new system, and, you know, that hurts the development of a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go into training camp, and Sanchez isn't getting as many reps as you should because, you know, they're doing a whole different package with Tebow, which they kept the Tebow's package a real secret. It's so secret they don't even know it, you know?
Right, right.
But if you look at the quarterbacks in the NFL that did not develop well, there's, you know, several reasons, but examples are Alex Smith. Every year, almost every year, he was dealing with a different system. I think now he's in the same system 2 years in a row, but I think his first 7 years, every year was a different system.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Campbell, the same thing. I mean, yeah, you're a pro, you got to deal with it, but that's not ideal, especially for development of a young quarterback.
Okay. Well, that's true. I mean, you know, but he's in his fourth year. He should be developing a lot more, or developed a lot more than he is right now, and he hasn't. And like I said, it seems like he's I wouldn't say regressed, but it looks like, for lack of a better word, he's regressed. He doesn't seem like he's gotten any better. He seems like he's gotten worse, and that's not a good sign. Especially when you have suspect wide receivers and the offensive line is not the best it is. You got an all-pro center. The Brickshaw Ferguson is not he's solid, but he's not all-pro status like he was a few years ago. You got Nick Mangold, and that's it. The other guys are suspect. And virtually Rex Ryan wants to run the ball. You virtually have no run game because of Sean Green is a plotter. He's not a really doesn't have the quicks to be effective in a run game. It's just a mess, plain and simple. But besides, so we're talking about a mess. Let's go down to the Lone Star State. I was hoping Black would be here, but he's not. Maybe that's why he's not here, because we're going to talk about his Dallas Cowboys and Tony Romo and his five, not one, not two, not three, not four, five interceptions. Five, people. Five interceptions, and the Cowboys get blown out by the Chicago Bears at home in a billion-dollar stadium on what was that on Monday night?
Yep.
Monday Night Football, and gets blown up. I mean, it was absolutely horrible. You saw Tony Romo talking to Dez Bryant on the sidelines, trying to get him to understand where he's supposed to be, which has been a habitual problem ever since Dez Bryant has been here. We talked about this, I think, last week, about Dez Bryant and not knowing where to go and having problems of where to go. I don't know if it was on this program or one of the programs we talked on, either this program or the Saturday program, about Dez Bryant and his route running, which has always been a problem, and the trust factor that Romo has or doesn't have with Dez Bryant versus Miles Austin and Jason Witten. Well, besides Dez Bryant, because he was targeted a lot, besides Dez Bryant catching a lot of balls, he dropped a few balls, ran or misinterpreted what the defense was showing, and caused Tony Romo at least one, could be two interceptions. And there was Ogletree, Dez Bryant were dropping balls left and right, which wasn't helping the offense. And Jay Cutler was, I think, only had one turnover, a fumble or something like that, in the whole game, which is monumental for Jay Cutler, because he's at least good for at least two interceptions a game. And he didn't throw any against a pretty stout with a pass rush and from the Dallas Cowboys. I don't know what you saw. I don't know if you watched the game, Jeff. Do we have any comments on how bad the Cowboys looked on Monday night?
Oh, yeah, that was ugly. And I know they fell behind, but they didn't fall behind that quickly. They didn't even try to run the ball.
Right.
And as bad as the Romo interceptions are, I think at least two of them were after the game was out of reach, so it didn't matter that much because the game was already lost. They were desperate. But Cutler had a nice, rebound game. I'm sure all eyes were on him. But he played solid. And I was thinking about a guy who used to play for the Bears, Rex Grossman. And he was a guy, when he was going lousy, he would just keep taking chances and not know when to cut his losses. Oh, that guy had some ugly games. And that's what Romo looked like, and that's what Cutler looked like the week before.
Yeah, and the thing about it, the following day, Jerry Jones said he was thoroughly, or 2 days later, whatever it was thoroughly disappointed in the performance of his team. Now, Jerry Jones is, ever since Jimmy Johnson left, Jerry Jones has been the, quite naturally, he's the owner, but he's also been the president of the general manager, whatever. I don't understand. In my opinion, we talked about this last week. I think he's doing an Al Davis, that he needs to step aside to get a football person in there. I think he tries to control too much of the team. And guys, the players I'm talking about, go past the coach and talk to Jerry about problems or whatever. And Jerry's coaching the team from the from his suite versus letting Jason Garrett do his thing. I don't know if you have any opinion on that, but it's an ugly situation that I can't see how it's going to get to resolve anytime soon.
Dallas is one of these teams. You look in recent years, they're barely over 500. They're an interesting middle-of-the-road team. They won rings with Jones as the owner, but that's going on 20 years. They suffered through some awful years, and it was Parcells who got that franchise back on track, which it's rare for him to bring in, a guy who's going to call the shots, and maybe not Parcells, but someone like him, They need to, you know, bring in someone to run the team. And the thing is, you know, Jones owns the team. He signs the check. Cause, you know, I understand that. But he could still call the shots without running everything, you know. I think he likes the spotlight, you know.
Well, I think one of the reasons why Parcells left is because the fact is that he couldn't deal with Jerry Jones and his wanting to get his way, wanting to impose what he wanted versus what Parcells thought they really needed, which is probably was a conflict of the two. Well, you got two A personality type of guys, two guys that two alpha males, and usually that's not a real good mix, especially you got Jerry Jones and Bill Parcells. That's a like oil and water, in my opinion. Both of them have a knack for not holding their tongue and saying it like it is, and a lot of people don't want to hear that, especially if you're the money person, especially if you're the owner and you're used to getting your way. You don't have to kick and scream. You just fire a person because if they don't do what you want, you just fire them, get somebody else that will listen and be a puppet for you. And I think Parcells didn't want to do that, and he decided to take his knowledge and experience to a different team. And after that, the Dallas Cowboys, in my opinion, really, really started having problems and going down. And they've been really very inconsistent. And their highs can be high and their lows can be real low, which is an all-time low this past week with Tony Romo. I heard a suggestion one time, in the last few days, Jeff, that maybe Dez Bryant should no longer be a receiver, just a kick returner or a punt returner. What do you think about that?
Well, I think I heard that too. I mean, it is a good idea, but they're not paying him return man money. They're paying him star receiver money. You know, I guess if he was returning both, they maybe give him some rest. But they still want him to start at wide receiver. And they're starting receivers who return kicks or punts, but I don't think there's too many who do both.
Right. Well, the reason why I'm saying that is because this guy, and he's been in the league long enough to be able to understand the playbook, and it's been under the same coach, under the same offensive coordinator, which has been Jason Garrett. Should be by this time, he should be noted playbook, should be able to read, or if he puts enough work in, be able to read what the defense has given you and be able to react and be on the same pace with the quarterback and not be in position like he's been in habitually, in bad, wrong position or taking a wrong route or going where he shouldn't be going, and a quarterback quite naturally thinks he's going to be in one spot. Romo thinks he's going to be in one spot, and he goes to another, which causes problems like an interception. It's hard to trust somebody like that, and it's a hindrance on the team. And if the team sees this guy doing this over and over again and really nothing being done because he's screwing up, that's not a good thing for team morale. I think someone's got to make a move, either bench this guy, put this guy on special teams, or do something so this guy, the team gets the message that we're not going to tolerate this. You have to get your act together. You got to earn what we want you to do. Right now, you haven't done that, so we have to either sit you down or just you're just going to be on the special teams. I know you're getting paid a lot, but until you perform to what you're getting paid, it ain't going to happen because you're hurting the team. Basically, you're hurting the team. If you don't do something about it, this is going to just going to keep on going. And it doesn't do anybody any good if it keeps on going and the team can see this guy screwing up. Anybody else probably on the team
that kept this, especially if it's a wide receiver. Anybody else that was on it, and screwing up like this would have probably got benched by now. Or if he was just a punt returner, that's what you're going to do. You're going to punt return until we have more trust in your wide receiver abilities. But because it's Dez Bryant, and because it's Jerry Jones's pet boy that he wanted to get, and hopefully he could turn around, nothing's been done. You follow what I'm saying? And I think that can be a problem if it hasn't been a problem already.
Dez Bryant's maturity has been questioned since he was in college. And
right.
I think one of the reasons they drafted him was for many years Jones regretted passing on Randy Moss. But Dez Bryant is no Randy Moss.
Yeah, well, that's true. But the thing about it, he's got the physical tools. I think it's all between the ears, Jeff. He's got the physical tools. He can't get manhandled by DBs. They have a hard problem dealing with him because he's so physical. He gets the best of the best corners because of his physical. I mean, his physicality, the strength he has. But the problem is, it's between the ears. I don't know if he puts in enough work. He puts in enough fill time. He doesn't get in the film or put in the work with the quarterback. I have no idea. He's got the physical tools. It's all got to be between the ears. And there's got to be some type of disconnect in there that for some reason it's not clicking. And if it's not clicking, it ain't clicking. I don't care how much physical tools you are. If it's not clicking or if the guy is not putting in the time, a message, in my opinion, has to be sent. You got to put him down. You got to say, Dez, you until further notice, you're not a wide receiver. You're just a punt returner. Until we see some improvement from you and see some more dedication or hard work, I understand that you're not – running around anymore. I understand we put a curfew and all kinds of other restrictions on you. But all that time you have, you should be in the film room trying to study your craft to get better at what you've been doing because you've been screwing up big time for the last few years. That's all I got to say. I don't know if you got any more to say, but that's all I got to say on that subject.
Yeah, I mean, I concur. And, Randy Moss, I mean, he had a lot of question marks coming into the draft. And, teams passed on him because of that. Minnesota took a chance on him. He stepped right in, had one of the greatest rookie years ever. Maybe it was because, despite his occasional outburst in immaturity, he's serious about football and he's a smart player. I've heard that from a lot of his former teammates, and maybe it was because there was a Chris Carter there to mentor him.
Yeah.
But I heard Tom Brady once raving about Randy Moss, how he's an encyclopedia of coverages. And I think a guy like him with a lot of ability, you tend to downplay their intelligence. He has more than just skills. I mean, just ability. He's got. He learned skills, and he can read the defenses and whatever. And believe me, you can't even compare Moss and Dez. You can't even compare. And ironically, now Moss is with San Francisco. There's been no drama. I think he's probably just happy to be back in the league.
Right.
Having a lot of production either. And you never know; it could pick up, but you don't bring in a guy like that to be a 50-yard-to-game guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what? I think sooner or later, Randy Moss is going to be getting some looks. I mean, because they have Vernon Davis there, they have Michael Crabtree who gets a lot of targets.
Randy Moss basically used for nine routes, which is, you know, deep throws. Sometimes he gets a quick slant or something like that. But the basic premise of them, they like to run the ball. So that's Frank Gore and Kendall Hunter. So and Alex Smith, like you saw when they played Minnesota, if you try to give him too much, you're flirting with disaster. He had the tendency to, at times, to be a very high-risk quarterback if you don't hold his reins. So I think they learned a lesson in Minnesota with Alex Smith. I don't think that's going to happen again. They kind of ran roughshod over the Jets, but that was basically the defense and the ineptitude of the Jets offense. So that's how I see it. But you made a good point that Randy Moss, when he came into the league and he had a lot of baggage, he had Chris Carter to mentor him. I can't think if there was anybody on the Cowboys when Dez Bryant came in there that a player I'm talking about was actually, and especially if it's a wide receiver, to mentor. And that's huge. Quite naturally, that's huge. I mean, look how Randy Moss turned out. I can't imagine how he would have turned out if there was not a player that had the life experiences Chris Carter have to be able to relate to Randy Moss on his level, to be able to have him understand that how to be a pro and what you needed to succeed in the league.
It's important. You know, veteran leadership, it's important.
All right, Jeff, let me see now. Let me see. We went through that. Enough of football. Let's talk about some baseball. Let's talk about this. Something that happened that hadn't happened in 45 years. Miguel Cabrera, the first Latino and the first ball player in 45 years to win one of the most elusive and difficult achievements in baseball, the Triple Crown. His manager last night when the Detroit won a 1-0 victory over Kansas City had tears welling in his eyes. And I absolutely love Jim Leland as a baseball manager, as a person, because he's a no-nonsense guy, but he's got a soft spot in his heart. When he's on the field, he reminds me of a softer Billy Martin, because this guy, he doesn't take any garbage when it comes to being a manager on the field. Cabrera finished the regular season hitting .330, 44 home runs and 139 RBIs, leading the American League in all three statistical categories, making him just the 15th player to achieve the Triple Crown and first since Boston's Carl Yastrzemski in 1967. And this is a quote from Jim Leland. "I've managed a lot of players, managed some great ones, but I never seen anything like this," Leland said. "When you're sitting back and it's over with, people are talking about Miguel Cabrera. The rest of the world will have no idea who his manager was, but I will." He joins the exclusive Triple Crown Club of Lou Gehrig, Ted Williams, Mickey Mantle, and Frank Robinson, who called it an incredible accomplishment for a gifted young man, and he should be proud of his all-around excellence and consistency throughout the season. And Cabrera is born in 83, so that makes him, what, 29?
About, so, yeah.
Yeah, 29 years old, give or take, whatever his birthday is this year. That means he's got a lot of baseball left. I'm not saying he's going to do the Triple Crown because it hasn't happened in 45 years, but he's a hell of a hitter, both average-wise and power-wise. And he carried that team
So my question to you is this, Jeff. He's got the Triple Crown, all right? There's been talk that it's between him and Mike Trout for the MVP of the league. In my opinion, because this guy's done something that hasn't been done in 45 years, there's no way that Mike Trout should ever even be in the conversation, because this guy carried this team to the playoffs doing it in Triple Crown form. I don't know how you feel about that. Talk to me.
I haven't been following it that close. I mean, needless to say, Triple Crown, very, very impressive. And I think the 45 years in between is the longest gap for Triple Crown winners. The thing is, the year that Ted Williams won it twice, which is unreal.
Unbelievable.
The first year he won it, he didn't get the MVP that year, because that was the year of DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak.
Okay.
And, I mean, it's changed in baseball. You think they could, the guys who vote for the MVP would, you know, specifically say, okay, this is the criteria, because there's different opinions on what is and what is not an MVP. It used to be very important, you know, going back to before divisional play, that your team won the pennant, but then that kind of became less important and it became more about numbers. And I think different guys have different criteria when it comes to voting. I mean, some years it'd be a slam dunk, you know, a Triple Crown winner, but, you know, with the MVP. But there have been years, I don't think recently, where guys have been on last place teams and won MVP, which makes you wonder. But baseball is so numbers driven, and it's been that way for a long time. I remember Andre Dawson got an MVP on a really lousy team. I think they were a last place team, and so did Mike Schmidt, you know?
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, I think it's hands down. Well, answer me this, because when you were talking about the 56-game hitting streak, what do you think is more significant? I understand who won it, but what do you think is more significant, a 50-game hitting streak or winning the batting title, winning the home run title, and winning the RBI title? In essence, the triple crown.
I guess because that's you know, six of one, you know, half a dozen of the other. The only reason I'll say the 56-game hitting streak is because nobody's done that since.
Right.
So I guess that's, you know, maybe a little more of an achievement, but they're both very impressive.
All right. We're staying on the subject of baseball. We got about a little more than 11 minutes left in the show. We're staying on the subject of baseball. And we're going to talk about, and I'm amazed. I mean, Black's not here, and we're talking about all his teams, and he's not here. We're talking about the Washington Nationals. All right. At one point, they, if I'm not mistaken, they were the Montreal Expos. They moved out of Montreal and they came down to Washington D.C. to be a team in Washington D.C. area. Didn't have a team for quite a few years. They were doormats at one point. They slowly but surely started picking up starting pitching, top-notch pitching, and then picking up decent everyday players. This year seemed like everything came together. Their pitching, for the most part, stayed together. With dominant pitching and clutch hitting helped them to a the majors' best, 98-64 in 2012, the number one seed in the National League, and the best record in the majors. The Washington Nationals are going to play whoever wins the wild card between the I'm trying to think who the wild card is between the Braves and the Cardinals. I think it's the Cardinals, or is it Cincinnati? Maybe it's Cincinnati. No, it's not Cincinnati. Won the division. I think it's the Cardinals that they have a play-in game, a wild card play-in game, and they play. I think they start playing on Saturday. You got any thoughts about the Nationals and their what they've accomplished this year?
Excuse me,
before you go, and they may have Gio Gonzalez maybe in the running for the Cy Young, because I think he's got the most wins, or tied with the most wins with A.J. Dickey.
You know, it's a good time for sports in the D.C. area, because not always the case. I think D.C. is known as a football town, but that was kind of by default maybe. I saw something. The Nationals don't have great attendance, but at least it did improve significantly when they won, which is what you look for, because you don't want to be like Tampa and win, go to the postseason and still be playing in front of an empty house, which I don't understand, which leads me to believe there might be too many franchises, and not every city is a major league city. It's pretty obvious, but the owners love those expansion fees, because when they expand it, the existing teams get a nice chunk. But it's maybe not in the best interest of the sport to have too many franchises. This has already been talked out with Strasburg. When they were winning and they realized they had a shot at the postseason, do you think they could have started giving him rest so at least he'd be, at least you'd be okay for the postseason. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure. I know exactly what you're saying. I was thinking the same thing. I've been asking the same question, Jeff. It makes no sense. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish your thought.
They could, right. I mean, they could have, early in the year, nobody expected them to make the postseason. I understand that. But let's say, when they were, winning games, say, okay, let's start, skipping him a start once in a while because he's our ace and we want him for the postseason, because if they don't win the World Series, there's going to be so many fans and media who are going to say, oh, what would they have done with Strasburg,
Right. A lot of second guessing.
I mean, it's a young team, but there's no guarantee you're going to be back.
Exactly.
And fans have long memories. Media has long memories. This story got a lot of publicity. People aren't going to forget. And you want to see the ace. You want to see the ace in the big games.
Exactly. And that's one of the things we had talked about this a few weeks ago. That's one of the things I was talking to Black about. I mean, they're in the postseason now, okay? Depends on how far they go. Depending on if they're going to get second guessed or not. So if they get to the first round, they lose. They're going to get second guessed. Well, how come Strasburg wasn't there? They get to the National League Championship and they lose. How come Strasburg wasn't there? If Strasburg wasn't there, you probably had a better shot to win it. If they lose at any level, including getting to the World Series, they're going to be second guessed on. Well, you should have Strasburg. You should have made some provisions or had some forethought to make sure that he was able to pitch for you in the postseason, and instead of just shutting the kid down. So quite naturally, it's supposed to be. And I forget the general manager's name. He had said, lay it all on him that he's going to make the final decision when he shut him down. And he eventually shut him down. But he's going to catch a whole bunch of flack, and I imagine, including national fans, for the simple fact when it counted, they didn't have Steven Strasburg in whatever the important game is. So it is what it is. We got about a little more than 5 minutes left in the show. There's one other thing I want to go. Let me do it this way. For those who watch the baseball, and you, especially the Nationals, a lot of times you see these presidents do a race, especially the Nationals, they do a race with Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, George Washington, And I don't know exactly who else, but there's three or four presidents, or four or five presidents that race. And for the longest, people, Teddy Roosevelt, for whatever reason, fell on his face, got tripped up, any kind of fluky things, never won a race. Well, the last game of the season in Washington, in the Nationals, had a race, and this is just on a lighter note. It's no big deal. Teddy Roosevelt finally won a race. So just wanted to throw that out there. The last story I want to go through, and not least story, but this is a pretty, I wouldn't say controversial, but it can be a story about a boxer who happens to be a featherweight boxer, who happens to be the number four ranked featherweight by the WBO with a record of 18-2-1 with 9 knockouts. Who's been fighting for 24 years, since the age of 7. Yesterday, this guy, and he's a Puerto Rican, he's from Puerto Rico, became the first openly gay man in the sports history, describing himself Wednesday, not yesterday, day before, yesterday, Wednesday, the 3rd, as a proud gay man. This is a quote from him. I want to try to be the best role model I can be for kids who might look into boxing as a sport and a professional career. I have and will always be a proud Puerto Rican. I have always been and will always be a proud gay man. We're talking about Orlando Cruz, who's supposed to be fighting... defending his WBO title, WBO NABO title, against Jorge Pazos in this month, in October 19th. Jeff, you got any story, any thought on this?
Wow, I give him credit. He's got guts. I think a lot of other guys would wait till they retired. But I guess he had his reasons. It's his decision. You know, he's got guts, so got nothing against the guy. And, featherweights, that's I'm curious how it'll affect his career, popularity, here or in Puerto Rico. You don't know how people will respond. But I think a lot of people, if you liked them before, you should still like them, you know?
Yeah, well, that's true. But, I mean... you're always going to get some different opinion of a person once they come out and say they're gay. Speaking of that, you've heard of ML Griffith, right? The boxer? ML Griffith, a welterweight and middleweight champion who fought in the 50s and 60s, came out after his career had ended saying in a Sports Illustrated story that he was bisexual. Griffith, 74, is still alive but suffers from pugilistic dementia. Did you know that? I didn't know that.
No.
I didn't know he came out and said he was bisexual. I did not know that. In the same story, it had that little paragraph at the end showing a comparison that Griffith came out after his career versus Cruz coming out during his career. Well, Jeff, we come to the end of the show. Before I close it out, you have anything that you want to close out the show with?
Well, it's week 5 for fantasy. There's already a body of work for this year. So, there were only two teams done by this week. Now I think it's 4 or 6. It's the heart of the season now. Good luck to everybody.
All right. Before I close it out completely, I have you know, Jeff, the league I won, the championship, one of Vic's leagues I won the championship in, I'm 0-4 right now. How the tide has turned. I can't buy a win. I cannot buy a win.
I almost went 1-4 for the first time in one of my other leagues. I'm grateful I didn't. But, you know, I've done well after slow starts. Those of us like you and I who are good managers, usually we start really kicking butt during the bye weeks because we know how to manage those properly. And, you know, just keep doing what you're doing. And you know all this. But, and, you know, if you have, you know, the way of doing things that usually works, stick with it. And, I mean, if a good trade comes along, do it. You know, I mean, you're not afraid to trade. But,
no, I'm not.
The one thing, and I was telling this to a buddy, you know, I'm not afraid to make a trade if it helps my team, but I won't do it just for the sake of shaking it up. And
right.
I think some people make that mistake when they're losing. It's like, okay, I got to do something. But if it doesn't help your team, what's the point? And
exactly.
I mean, I won a championship once after a 1-4 start, and you know, it was a high stakes league, and I was going mental. And I just was like, you know, why am I losing? And there were, you know, several things. It was a lot of the worst kind of losses, the high-scoring close losses.
Right, right.
And I was playing the tougher teams in the league, but then I made one trade, but I didn't do stupid things. And I just kept on trucking, and this was I won 8 in a row.
Hey.
And I
you get on a roll, man. You know, you can do that.
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully also the breaks will even out. So, and I'll tell you, when I was sweating that one league, the one that I almost went 0-4, because I thought, you know, it's too early to play spoiler, you know? So,
mm-hmm.
But you win one, you're back in the mix, you know? So,
right.
Good luck to you.
Okay. Since we have that now, I want to thank Jeff for spending the time here. Tune in next week. Same place, same spot, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Jeff and I will be here. Hopefully Black will be back with us. Tomorrow will be a straight No Chaser show with Mac Williams as the host. I'm the co-host. FSP show on 1 o'clock on Eastern Standard Time on Saturday. And then, quite naturally, the Master Plan, which I host on 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time in the morning. Fantasy starts and sits. I run down every team, every game, until it is done. So if you have a question or you have an not sure about your player on your team that's in fantasy, I run it down. If you want to listen, in my opinion, I've been very hot, and I'm not blowing my own horn, but I'm telling you, for the last 2 weeks, I've been extremely hot on calling how these players are going to be playing. So you may want to listen. If you're listening out there, because there's a strong possibility, and I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but it's a strong possibility that I can help you guys out. I've been pulling guys. I pulled Jackie Battle. I told you guys about Jackie Battle last week. That's one of the things that off the top of my head, I told you guys about Jackie Battle last week. He jumped in over Ryan Matthews and had a very good day. That's the type of things I'm giving you on Sunday morning. So until then, I'll talk to you guys later. Till next week, see ya.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on.